Chapter 79. The Death of Hope and the Deepest Cut. Geraldine Hockaday had been taken to the Royal London Ophthalmic Hospital in Lower Moorfields, but other than removing the infected remains of her left eye and dressing the wounds, there was nothing they could do for her. She was taken to University College Hospital to be closer to her family home, but her parents did not avail themselves of that convenience. I paid her a visit. Geraldine's eyes were bandaged, but more surprisingly, so was her left arm, and both wrists were tied to the sides of the bed frame. She had slashed herself with a broken glass. The matron, a tall woman with a severe face but a kindly manner, had explained. Geraldine jumped when I approached. "It is me, March." I sat beside her.
"Oh, March, I had a dreadful visitor today. An Inspector Quigley."
"He is a horrible man," I agreed. "But what did he want?" Geraldine twisted her head in a sweeping circle. "Would you like some more medicine?" the matron asked, but I do not know if her patient even heard her.
"He told me that attempted suicide was a criminal offence, punishable by prison, and that I should not survive long in there."
"I am sure any judge, when he knows what you have been through, would not want to punish you any further." Something metallic clattered to the floor and she let out a cry.
"But he said it would be different if I cooperated and told him the name of Peter's customers."
She threw her head back so hard I thought she would wrick her neck.
"I told and told and told him that Peter was not like that, but he would not believe me. And then he said not to worry about prison because he had got two doctors to certify that I was insane and that I should be put in a madhouse and kept in a straitjacket for the rest of my life."
"He does have a certificate," matron confirmed quietly, "and they are coming back this afternoon." She went to settle a girl who was weeping noisily. "I shall see what we can do to fight it," I promised, but without much hope. For even Sidney Grice, with all his ingenuity and powerful contacts, had not been able to keep me out of an asylum.
"I should have cut deeper," she whispered.
"Do you think Peter would want that?"
"He is the only person who will be pleased to see me."
"He wanted you to live again," I argued.
"For what?"
"I have a friend who was a beautiful child," I said, "but her parents were killed and she was badly disfigured in a fire."
"Is that supposed to make me feel better?"
I remembered her fears just in time to stop myself touching her hand. For many years, she thought she had nothing to live for and kept the means to kill herself.
"Was she violated?"
Geraldine squirmed. "No, but she was forced to witness her friend being attacked and she is in constant pain."
"Is this one of these stories children are told about other people being worse off?" she squirmed. "Oh, hell, March, I cannot even cry!"
I forgot Geraldine's fear and took her hand, and she must have forgotten too, for she curled her tiny fingers around mine.
"How did your friend plan to do it?"
"She carried an amulet filled with cyanide," I replied.
"Oh!"
Geraldine made a sour face.
"That is a horrible way to die. I read about it in your story."
"She gave it to me to get rid of," I told her, "because she realized that she wanted to live." Geraldine writhed and arched and let out a sob.
"It comes in stabs,"
she cried and banged her head up and down on the pillow.
"Oh, Daddy, it hurts so much."
A nurse hurried over and gave her an injection, and almost immediately Geraldine settled down.
"When I was a child and my daddy loved me, no, do not tell me that he still does. He used to tell me stories every night. The Firefly was my favourite."
"I do not know that one," I said. But she was already asleep. "We cannot keep her like this forever," the matron confided. "The effects of the opium are wearing off quicker, and she needs bigger doses, too big. Much more will kill her." "Would that be such a bad thing?" The matron crossed her arms tightly. "I entered this profession to save lives, not to take them." "I am sorry." She relaxed her arms. "The Lord will take her when he is ready." I hope he does not wait too long, then, I said, and I do not think she had it in her heart to disagree. For perhaps half an hour Geraldine slept peacefully, but all too soon she awoke with a jolt, already whimpering in pain. Matron was attending to a young woman who was vomiting blood across the aisle.
"You remember what you told me about your friend with her amulet, and how it brought her good luck?" Geraldine asked. "Do you still have it?"
"Yes," I answered warily.
"I could do with some luck," she said blandly. "Are you sure? It is my only hope."
She put her free hand on top of mine.
"Don't let them do it to me, March."
"We can fight it," I tried again.
"And if we fail?"
Geraldine asked simply.
"And even if we win, what is there for me now?"
I reached into my bag. "There is a screw cap on top." I put it into her upturned palm.
"Like a watch crown? I feel it."
"Geraldine," I tried one last time, but I was too tired.
"God bless you, March," she said. "You can leave me now."
I kissed her goodbye. A new God would not bless me for that day's work. I doubted that he would ever bless me again.